Welcome to Future Based Podcast. In this fourth episode, we will be introducing and exploring the topic of biohacking with public speaker and writer Peter Joosten. Peter will be introducing himself later on. But first, a little introduction. Future Based are talking about biohacking. I'm very much interested in how technology is influencing our social norms and our everyday lives. In my opinion, technological developments like biohacking and mind hacking shouldn't be viewed as something opposed to what it means to be human, but rather as developments in which the technology works as a mediator. For more information about this topic, I refer to Don Eide and Peter Palverbeek. There will be a link under this podcast on our website, futurebased.org, about their works and the books they've written. And in extent to this topic, we want to research the possibilities and raise questions about the implications and ethics around new technologies. And therefore, we are looking for input, comments, discussions around new technologies with artists, philosophers, and scientists. So if you have questions, please let us know at goodnews@futurebased.org or get in contact on Instagram at artbasedfuture. In a follow-up, we are also organizing a few meetups with philosophers and artists on brain and body connection. And I'm not name dropping just yet, but it's already very promising and very interesting. So if you don't want to miss out, please subscribe at our website, futurebased.org. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Sabine.
Thank you for joining me. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself at first?
Yeah, sure. I like to call myself a biohacker and a do-it-yourself futurist, which I will explain in a second. And I'm based in the Netherlands. I also have several Dutch blogs, like projectleven.nl, ptjoosten.net. But for your international audience, I also have a website called superhumantalks.com, which is in English, and also features a YouTube channel in which I discuss the implications of human enhancement, upgrading ourselves, and consequences on healthcare and society, education systems, etc.
Yeah, because you are upgrading yourself constantly, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's also where the term biohacking originates.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you heard about the term life hacking, which is more about increasing your productivity with all kinds of apps and gadgets and tools.
Yes.
And you can also look in the same way at computer hacking. Like normally we had a computer, and computer hackers like Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, they try to make the computers faster or perform all kinds of different tasks. And we are further and further advancing in the era in which we can also have the same kind of possibilities with biology, with our human body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the term biohacking originates. So in a way, I try to upgrade myself in all kinds of ways.
Yeah. Yes, you've even written a book about it.
Yeah. For now, it's in Dutch.
Yeah.
With the title Biohacking.
Yeah.
And the subtitle, The Future of the, how do you say it? Of the feasible man. So the upgraded person, or how you can say it. And it's more like with the fundamentals about what is biohacking and what is also quantified self, which is where it all started for me. So you can track and measure and monitor all kinds of aspects of your life. And then you can apply technology or biology to try to increase that. For example, if you're measuring your sleep quality, you can do all kinds of things to improve your sleep. But I like to see that, and I also make that case in my book. You have now more called lifestyle biohacking. For mm-hmm. example, there's also a US-based company called Bulletproof, and they're selling actually Bulletproof coffee, which is a famous biohacking breakfast.
Yes.
And it's coffee mixed with butter and extract of coconut oil. Mm-hmm. And then you put it in the blender and then you drink it.
How does it taste?
Yeah, it actually tastes better than really? It sounds. Yeah, okay. It's like a very creamy cappuccino.
Yeah.
And I used to drink it a lot, and now it's, I think, once or twice a week.
Yeah.
So that's more a form of lifestyle biohacking. And the same applies for, maybe you know, the Wim Hof method, where you doing cold exposure, swimming in ice bath. But these are techniques that are available right now. And I'm more interested in like real biohacking, like genetic modification, neurotechnology, brain implants, epigenetic programming, like if we are really able to upgrade our lives so we can live longer or improve our cognition or maybe improve our physique, etc.
Yeah, you're using the term really, you know, really improving. What's the difference for you between really improving your life and improving your life? Maybe that's a little bit of a philosophical question.
Yeah, interesting. Well, like let's take age. Of course, the how long you live and what kind of health is also for mainly influenced also by luck and by genes.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say with applying the lifestyle with enough, moving enough, taking supplements, sleeping enough, having not enough take care of my stress, etc., I can become 100 years old, let's say.
Yeah.
And the difference with really improving myself is where I use genetic modification and maybe change body parts with 3D bioprinted organs. I can live to become 180 years old. So that's for me a difference between improving myself and really improving myself.
All right.
And maybe with intelligence, I would say with taking nootropics or doing meditation or these kinds of things, I can improve my cognition with...
Yes, nootropics for our audience. Well, I'm interested in that part because it's helping you improve your cognition, right? I read it about it and I've seen a podcast of you talking at, I believe, BNR Studios in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And you said it's not that it improves like 5 or 10% or something, but like the cutting edge.
Yeah. For me, it's all about minor gains at the moment, at least.
Yes.
Which are with the nootropics are also legally allowed, at least here in the Netherlands.
Yes.
So it helps me to improve my cognition or my memory or my speaking abilities. And you can see nootropics in a way. There are some critiques also from professors which says would say it's total nonsense. But you can see as nootropics as you have supplements for your health, for example, fish oil or magnesium. And you also have nootropics for building strength, for example, creatine. And nootropics are supplements to improve your brain function.
But anyway, if it's nonsense, if you have the feeling it works.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, and also because that's also a term which comes up quite frequently, if you even if it's placebo is one of the best known
and
proven ways to improve a certain aspect of your life, so why shouldn't you use it?
Yes, good question, good point. I've also read about you are very vulnerable to stress, but are you really adjusting your lifestyle to
Well, not in a way I really should want to, but that's also, if you want to be full-time improving or optimizing your life, it's in a way also your main focus, maybe your only. So I also do other things, so I have to make a decision in what I'm doing. So I try to do a lot of things in my morning ritual or my evening ritual, like a daily meditation and taking the nootropics and supplements and doing all kinds of strength training. And, but not like if you really want to be, at the moment at least, if you really want to upgrade your body, it's almost like a daily task, at least for me.
Yes.
So With the meditation and also taking care of my sleep, that are my two main cortisol.
I'm taking care of my sleep too.
Yeah, good. That's really important.
Okay, good. Yeah. Nice. You said I have to make decisions in which way I choose to upgrade my body or my lifestyle. How do you make decisions?
Yeah, I want to improve my life, but it's pretty vague, I think. So for a time, I did personal experiments. I still do them, but they're not as monthly as I would like to. And during such a monthly experiment, it was pretty clear, like, I'm going to do X and I'm going to see what are the effects on my life. For example, not drinking coffee or alcohol, or doing my daily meditation, or try to upgrade my sleep. So that was really clear. But like in normal life, what I like to do is to at least to be able, but it's really difficult to measure it, to perform better both with my cognition, my physique, also maybe my emotions, but that's still a little bit difficult to track and measure.
Yes.
And I also would like to have a long health span. So I want to be able to live, I don't know, till I'm 120, but also to be able to perform in sports when I'm still 110, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the goal I'm looking for right now, but it maybe it shifts when I'm 70 or something. When we do the second podcast round.
Okay. That's my next question. When does this test on yourself, when does it succeed? But you already kind of answered it. You want to be 120 and sports.
Yeah.
Until you're 70 or 100, maybe 110.
Yeah, 110. Yeah. 110, yeah. I still want to do trail running, etc.
Yes. You also were talking about the inevitable in your book. And that's a term in philosophy which gives me the chills. because how do you mean the technological biohacking developments are inevitable? In what kind of way do I read inevitable in your book?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I also had an interview with Michael Bass in which he had a little story about how he did this PhD thesis about the Cold War, which around 1980 was also seemed to be inevitable, and then the Berlin Wall broke down, which was at the moment a complete surprise. So it wasn't. So it could be the same for biohacking, but I think there are two reasons it's inevitable in what kind of form. The first one is it's I think a part of human nature in which we also already want to make ourselves better in any way, just a sort of evolutionary in our sort of selfish genes that we want to prolong our lives and give our genes to the next generation and compete against other ones. And the other thing is that we are more in an international arms race at the moment. So it could be, for example, near the end of 2018, you saw it with the genetic modification of embryos of babies in where there was, at least in science, there was a sort of international agreement that we wouldn't allow it, and then there was still some scientists who decided, well, I want to be the first one. And so not that I'm advocating these kinds of practices, but I think it's a combination, like we as mankind are used to using technology with our clothes, and we already putting technology on ourselves or in ourselves, like with lenses and healthcare, with pacemakers and hearing implants, and we are still using more and more genetic testing also with when children are born or when we are at the hospital for a certain disease. I think it's in our human nature. Once we analyze things and we know how it works, we want to develop it and upgrade it. But it's still a famous example concerning biohacking or human enhancement is a plastical surgery, which was mm-hmm. firstly developed to help soldiers which came back from First World War. And now it's used as a form of upgrading ourselves. And I think it's very possible, maybe I should not say inevitable, that we use technologies like in neurotechnology or in genetic modification also to upgrade ourselves in the future.
Okay, very, very possible is a world of difference between inevitable and very possible.
Maybe in the next edition I will print it very light.
You were talking about making myself better, enhancing myself. We've already talked about making better humans or making humans better. What is the difference in your opinion? When do we make better humans? When do we make humans free them from diseases? And when are we producing a better humankind? Creating better humans.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question.
And also an ethical one.
Yeah, because I think there are not a lot of people opposed against the idea to help people who have a certain kind of disease.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if we stay with the case of genetic modification, I had an interview with Tristan Roberts, and he made some publicity, I think 1 year ago, in which he did genetic modification on himself. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to change his own genes because he has HIV.
Yeah.
And he wanted to change the genes in some of his fat cells so they would produce an antibody against the HIV. Well, and I think, well, that's great because he doesn't need the medicine, and there's still a lot of debate if it's good that he's experimenting on himself. But and the babies that at least one of the babies that were born in China is now resistant against HIV. So you might maybe think, well, that's also good, but the difference between making humans better and making better humans is how do we decide what is a disease and what's not a disease? For example, if you have a person with a really low IQ, I think at least we here in the West would say, well, that's not a disease, so we wouldn't try to upgrade that. But there is a gray area, and what's interesting is that you have also, I think with everything in life, you have also money and power. For example, there are already institutions in California where you can decide about the color of the eyes of the baby.
Yeah.
And there in Cyprus, there's also a clinic where you can go if you want to have a male or a female child. And I'm thinking, well, and it's a difficult question, because in a sense, I have the feeling, well, we cannot stop it. It happens. So what? But yeah, maybe we should regulate it as society or as politicians or as government. But then you also run the risk that it goes into an illegal
circuit.
Illegal circuit. So and if you have the question, I don't have answers. But between making better humans or humans better. Who decides? For example, if you are pregnant, do you decide as a parent, or does the government decide, or does like a scientific board, or does your general practitioner decide if something is a disease and you can cure it with genetic modification or other ways? Or do we leave it to the free market? There are a lot of
difficult
but really important
cultural standards.
Also cultural standards.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I'm at the moment more like a fascinating spectator. But I want to take a stance on this. But I have the feeling I don't have enough information yet on that.
I have the same problem. Because we were recording a podcast for this one where I was talking about ethics. I also would like to take a stand, but I there's so much going on and so many developments. that it's very difficult to track everything down and to reflect on it and get an opinion, form an opinion about it. But don't you think, because you are also, you are an expert, don't you think we should reflect more on this kind of questions?
Yes, I think so. And also, I like to see myself also as a, well, as a human guinea pig.
So
I think it's something I don't come up with the proper term, but something I dislike is like a more academia kind of philosophy. Or sorry to like a conversation about well, let's take human enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best way to talk about it is if you have crazy people like me or others, which are also willing and able to do small experiments.
Absolutely.
In that way, you can really have a good conversation about it. But on the other hand, you could what you already can see with nootropics, where we also talked about 10 minutes ago or something, is a theory by Inès de Beauvoir, I think, from Rotterdam University.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, take nootropics. If I'm advocate of that, so I write about it and I'm enthusiastic about it. But what if in a population of students it becomes the norm to use nootropics?
Yes.
And you don't have the kind of, if you don't use it, you are left behind.
Yeah.
And that's something I become more aware of lately. Like, biohacking is maybe also a little bit narcissistic, that you really try to upgrade yourself.
Yeah.
And more I come to the realization that I think, oh, what are the consequences on others of
yes.
all my actions? So
it will become the status quo.
Yeah.
Yeah, a normal.
Yeah. And on the one hand, I think, well, has always been the case in history, or at least for something that succeeds, because otherwise it wouldn't succeed. But yeah, and I also think about well, what if we in Netherlands or in Europe decides not to cope with not to take part in this upgrading of ourselves, of this biohacking. Wouldn't you have in the US or in China have like societies which are 2 times more intelligent than we are and live 4 times longer than we are? And I think we also need to make international agreements about these kinds of things.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the other hand, you can see it's really, at least with the climate change, it's already been pretty difficult to do it. So.
But then again, then is it all about power, having the power? It's a power race. Is it a power race? A kind of a cold war about biohacking, a cold war about algorithms, for example?
Yeah, at the moment it's not that much about biohacking, but more indeed about artificial intelligence and biotechnology.
Mm-hmm.
And you can apply indeed biotechnology also in humans. So in a way that's really about biohacking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's it's indeed about power. What's really interesting is that DARPA, which is the Defense Agency Research Projects in the United States, they're also investing heavily in synthetic biology and also in biohacking applications. And that's of course a little bit, I would say, tricky. But I have to use a bigger term for that, because they want to use biohacking, for example, to upgrade their shoulders so they can run longer and they need less sleep and they can be focused longer, and in that way they can perform better on the and it's the same kind of technology, but it's really the question, how do you use it and for what purposes and what does it mean for power? Yeah.
You are experimenting on yourself. What's the craziest thing you have done till this far?
I think three things, like more in the lifestyle biohacking. One of the craziest things I did was, for example, not eating for 5 days,
which
is now really, or for trend in Silicon Valley. That's yeah. where also I get a lot of my inspiration.
Okay.
And it's claimed that it's like a reset for your body, which gets into autophagy. But I think that was pretty difficult, but especially after 2 days, and then it was okay. By the way, if you're listening and you want to try it, please consult your general practitioner. And one other thing I did, which is most crazy, I think, is that I implanted a tiny chip in my hand.
Yeah.
So I'm a partly cyborg.
Yes.
but I must admit that at the moment I'm not using the chip for not a lot in my daily life. So I can put information on it. It's just like a USB stick, but only really small.
Mm-hmm.
But I interviewed a lot of, experts in this field. There's a guy, Neil Harbison, which has a brain implant in which he can hear sounds.
Yes.
And there's a guy who has a compass, and every time he turns to the north, it's got a little vibration. So in that way, you can upgrade your senses.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's really interesting. And maybe I want to have night vision, etc. But the chip for me was a way that I thought, well, I think as technology gets smaller and smaller, I want to see what's it like and how does it feel and how do other people respond.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I did not do is, for example, which I also consulted a friend of mine who's also really a PhD in biotechnology. And I get a lot of questions about this. Do you want to do genetic modification on yourself?
Yeah.
And for that, I decided, well, I'm not sure how these things are going to play out. And I think CRISPR-Cas9 is at the moment also like 30% reliable or efficient. I do not like to tinker with myself with that, but at least with the compass, which gives you vibration, that's the thing I'm thinking about to
really? Do next. Yeah. An upgrade of your Google Maps.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. And let's see how, just like a bat or some animals have perfect sense of their surroundings.
Yes, that's a question because we, before all this technology, before Google Maps and before, we were more focused on our intuition, more focused on social aspects. Like, for example, Google Maps, like you are want to implant something that points you to the north, but you could also ask where the north is, for example. It may be a strange comparison, but intuition, social aspects, they are very difficult to pin down into data, into hardwired technology.
Yeah.
And in that respect, what does it mean to be human for you? You know, is being human something what needs to be updated? I don't know. It's not a critical question. I'm just curious.
That's a good, maybe the reason I've started with upgrading my body and my cognition is that these are also more easily measured. Mm-hmm. And they're also, let's say, the low hanging fruit, which brings me to an interesting question, because there are also futurists who say, well, with these advancements in biotechnology and genetic engineering, etc., we should not only upgrade people with their intelligence or their physique, but we should also speak about moral enhancements.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't we upgrade people so they're more empathic and they're more better social skills? Oh, and that's what gives me goosebumps.
Yes, me too.
Because that's more like a top down. So I also sometimes give talks at education conferences, etc., and there I also make the case that I think maybe you are in the future where algorithms and artificial intelligence systems and robots, they take over a lot of aspects of our lives. You have to also have to think about what kind of skills do you need for our future world, mm-hmm. and also your future as an employee or entrepreneur or professional.
Yeah. Hard skills, soft skills?
Yeah, I think more soft skills. Like more like these type of skills that computers or robots or algorithms cannot do, like cooperation and creativity and maybe called intuition.
Yeah.
human interaction. And I think at the moment these are not really upgradable skills in the human body, at least for I know.
So, yeah, for I know. You already said for I know. Will they be?
Well, there are, of course, what I don't know if it goes too far-fetched for your audience, but one aspect in which I'm really interested in, like you have biohacking, but then you have subsets like mind hacking, which is more about the brain, body mm-hmm. hacking, which is more about the body. And the third trend is consciousness hacking. So where you try to upgrade your consciousness, and people in that field are also experimenting a lot of with psychedelics.
Yeah. So,
and I think in a way that's a positive development, because they're testing psychedelics for treatment of PTSD, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you can use technology for expanding your consciousness and spirituality, and maybe also your being human, I think that would be a good thing.
Are you going to test with psychedelics?
Well, I tested ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Which was, for me, really strange, because in the beginning I was thinking, oh, what's happening? How can I explain what's happening here? And
but later, how do I read it in data?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And but not further than that. But I'm for example, I'm using also meditation apps on my smartphone, which is also a light form of consciousness hacking.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that technology also gives us the opportunity, but you have to be aware, you have to make conscious decisions about for which kind of applications you want to use it.
So is this the next step for you? Because you have written a book about biohacking.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing a fascination for mind hacking.
Yeah.
Is this the next step? Is the next book going to be about mind hacking?
That could be. But I'm also, I've also written about it in this book, but I'm more and more fascinated about the societal implications of human enhancement and biohacking,
mm-hmm.
and upgrading ourselves and ethics and philosophy, and how should governments should they regulate or not, and what if this comes into an illegal circuit, etc.
I think they should.
Mm. Yeah, I also think so.
Yeah, I think there need to be a set of rules, better rules than they are now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think just like with algorithms and...
Yes, exactly.
Artificial intelligence. But it's difficult, of course. I know for politicians, because you also want to boost innovation in a country. So you do not want to have too tight of regulations, but you also have to protect your the citizens in your country. So they're not doing all too much crazy biohacking things on themselves. But I think like more of guidelines, yeah, that would, I think that that's a good development.
Is it something education should follow up to?
Yeah, I also think that, yeah. And also that maybe in the future you have different, so I don't think in the future that there's one that you can upgrade to be one superhuman person that's really good, really intelligent, but also very creative and also very good in sports. But so I think you also need to make choices. For example, you want to upgrade for a certain purpose. And I think the best way to know what you are, maybe you don't want to upgrade yourself. I think the best way for that is more like a human skill, more like, which also think would interest you, like Aristoteles.
Yeah.
Aristotle said, know yourself. And
yes.
I think that's, if you know yourself, then you can decide, oh, I want to make that kind of adjustment to my body. Or
yeah.
I do not want to have.
I don't think it's only to know yourself, but I think it's the question what it means to be human becomes very more important
mm-hmm.
when we are analyzing ourselves into data or into possibilities, because it's all focused on goals.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be human? To objectify ourselves into data.
Yeah.
And biohacking is a part of that.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and... In a sense, you can say in how am I represented in these numbers,
mm-hmm.
But there's also, so that's one part, but I would oppose to that we are also doing things we think we cannot explain later, and then when we look at the date, then maybe algorithms can explain it. So I'm a little bit in the middle in that.
Yes, I've read about Kevin Kelly talking about the gap between the acceptance of new techniques, and then he talked about the acceptance of techniques, and then the gap between the acceptance and the implications.
Mm.
So we don't know what the implications of techniques are. We accept them, we use them to our means, and then we forget to think about it. We forget to think about the implications. So I think it's very important work what you do, because it gives us insight about the relations we are having with new technologies.
Yeah, I also think that the only way to really know what the implications are is when you really put it into practice,
to try it
and see how things turn out. And at that moment, I think you can really make an informed decision about if we want to use it as society as a whole or leave it to individuals. Or
mm-hmm.
So I think I would agree with Kevin Kelly.
I was talking about Kevin Kelly. Do you have any tips for the reading, of course, your own book?
Yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah, I really like the work of Kevin Kelly because he's... I really like his language, his use of language. So he would say it's not unlikely, but possible, or these kinds of verbs. So
yeah.
I really like it.
Specific.
Really specific. I would also, and I read The Inevitable, so that
yeah.
comes out good. So I did not read his other books, but they're still on my to-read list. I really like Yuval Noah Harari,
mm-hmm.
with Homo Deus and Sapiens. And I also like the work of Gerd Leonhardt. He's from Austria, I think. And he wrote also Technology versus Humanity.
Okay.
These are three books or three thinkers I would suggest.
Recommend. Okay.
Yeah, I recommend, yeah.
Okay, thank you. And your own book, where can we...
Yeah, you can buy it on, if you're international, you can buy it on Amazon,
mm-hmm.
for Kindle, and in all the bookstores, and also online in the Netherlands. And just type in, I'm also on Goodreads, just
okay.
type in biohacking or Peter Joosten, and then
yes.
you find it.
And where can we find you online? Can you repeat it again?
Yeah, you can go to peterjoosten.net,
mm-hmm.
or superhumantalks.com, and there you also find links to my YouTube and my podcast and all the other things I do.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Welcome.